This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org to discover more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.
Hello and welcome to the Not Alone podcast. I'm Sam Fredrickson.
And I'm Jason Moitoso.
And this week, we're doing something a little different.
I don't know what you're talking about. This is like every week for me.
something that, if memory serves, we've never really done before, even if Jason doesn't recognize or realize that. Instead of taking a look at a specific person or a place, although we will be doing both people and places with this one, this week we're going to focus instead on a paranormal or supernatural object. Now, as we mentioned last week, we're not ever going back to the United States. We're still outside of the United States.
Our world tour.
Thank you.
Ugh. Words are tough for me today.
And I really think, if it was up to me, I would rename these last few episodes Two Spooks Abroad. I think that would be a good little, like,
you think you're segment. So clever, yep. Don't you?
I originally started by saying Two Idiots Abroad because there's like that show, An Idiot Abroad. Yeah. But then I felt like that was mean, and so I decided I'd do Two Spooks Abroad. In any case, we're not changing the name of the podcast, so it doesn't matter. This week, our story is one of the most fantastic and fanciful that we've ever covered, and if it is true, is one of the most significant scientific discoveries mankind has ever made.
But it sounds like it's straight out of Doctor Who, so you know.
Even I must admit that it's one heck of a big if. If you listened last week, you know that we did our very serious episode on the Ariel School encounter. And Jason and I were kind of at odds with that one, and I just figured we could both have something that we agreed on this week. And unfortunately, there's nothing that I know that I believe in that Jason also believes in. So I decided to figure something that I didn't believe in. But that doesn't mean you can't believe in it. And in fact, there are quite a number of people who do. I'm just saying.
But they're probably wrong.
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
I'll say it.
So now, Jason, anything before we get started here?
No, Sam. I'm ready. I'm buckled up, strapped in. Let's do this. Take me on a journey to Italy? Where are we going?
Around.
What's going on?
We're going around. It's primarily Italy.
A grand tour.
Yes, just like that show, The Grand Tour. Yeah, the knockoff of Car Show. What's the car show?
It's
Top Gear.
Yes, it's Top Gear.
But it's just a knockoff of
Top
Gear.
No, it's the same guys.
Yeah.
They just got fired. Now they're on Amazon. It's fine.
All right. There you go. Now,
it's practically the same show. It's great. It's great. It doesn't come out quickly enough, though. That's my only.
That's how I feel about the Great British Baking Show.
It's really fair.
Although we did just find a hidden season of it on PBS.
Nice.
So we're going to watch that.
Nice.
On our new Apple TV, which we've had for a while now. But I love it. So anyway, back to the podcast that we're doing here. Now, our first player in this story is a man by the name of Father Pellegrino Marcello Maria Ernetti.
Oh, dear.
We're just going to call him Ernetti.
Ernetti. I like it.
Hey, it's Ernetti.
I can deal with that.
Thank good. Now, Ernetti was a Benedictine priest.
And Which means?
He was a part of the Order of Saint Benedict.
Okay.
Yep. That's all I know about that.
Was Saint Benedict?
He was a saint.
Okay, all right.
They wear black robes. They don't have a strict vow of silence, but they do have kind of built-in silent parts to the day, and they kind of encourage silence at every turn.
Sounds wonderful.
There's something to be said. One of the rules of their order is that they must give shelter to someone if a traveler appears and they are of a good nature and they're willing to work, around the monastery. They have to be given shelter and all of that, and allowed to have the chance to incorporate if they desire. So just another order of Catholicism.
Yeah. Okay.
So
derailed one.
one.
How many
if
more
we get
times?
To three, I'm throwing everything in the trash. No,
liar.
I don't care.
You just called these your babies to me yesterday. They are your children.
I lent Jason the microphone and the interface and everything yesterday, and it was literally the way that I assume I'll feel when I like send my child to camp for the first time. I just watching him drive away, I was like, oh no. What if something bad happens? What if this is the last time I ever saw him? I never told him I loved them. That's me petting the microphone. I'm sure
sorry
that's very
for your
pleasing
ears.
For yeah. everyone. All right. Anyway, so yes, he is a Benedictine priest. And among other things, he was considered an expert in archaic music and was also. Yeah. Yeah.
Archaic music.
Archaic music.
That's
so
interesting.
It's termed as pre-polyphonic music. So it would all be just monophonic, which is just one.
Drums?
No, it's like chant music. Like polyphonic. Because I'm playing, and again, I'm not
like
a music
chord.
Major. Yeah, you have multiple notes at the same
gotcha.
Time. Monophonic.
Okay, so literally notes versus chords.
Pretty sure. Pretty sure. Not 100% sure. And if anyone here knows better than me, please let me know. But that's what I assume that it means.
Okay.
Okay?
We'll go with it for now.
So I think he said like his area of study was from the time of Christ to 1000 AD. That was the kind of music that he studied.
Mm-hmm.
He was also a practiced exorcist should the need arise. But more than anything
well,
else...
Well, if he's practiced, the need arised quite a bit then.
True. More than anything else, other than his commitment as a man of God, he saw himself as a man of science. He had a special interest in physics, which has often, through the lens of religion, been seen as aspects of God, these laws that were created to govern the universe. Now, some have said that Ernetti even held a degree in quantum physics, but that's never been confirmed, as far as I can tell. He was known to be constantly attempting to fuse the religious and the scientific in any way that he could, and in the time that this story begins, the 1950s, the Catholic Church, as it still does today, did much to advance science, and its members were often some of the ones on the front line making major discoveries. In fact, the true start of our story took place in such an environment, encounter between these two men of faith and science. The first was, of course, Father Ernetti, and the second was a man that we do know a little bit more about. He was a Franciscan friar. That would be a friar who follows the order of St. Francis of Assisi, or Assisi, who was pretty great. And this fella was by the name of Agostino Gemelli. Now, Gemelli.
Gemelli.
Sorry. Please don't do this. That is going to triple the length of this episode if you do that every time I say an Italian name.
I've had three coffees today.
Gemelli, amongst other things, was a trained physician specializing in neurophysiology and neuropsychology. Now, on the 17th of September, 1952, in the experimental physics laboratory of the Catholic University of Milan, the two of them were attempting to filter a recording of a live performance of some Gregorian chant, which of course would have been right up Ernetti's alley as an authority in that kind of music. The goal was to remove some of the harmonic overtones that had muddied the sound quality of the chant. And as they were working, the wires upon which the sounds were recorded and being re-recorded continued to break frequently. Gemelli was frustrated, and as was his custom, he made a plea to the spirit of his dead father, saying, "Grant us relief, you know, help me, Father, help me." Now the relief came, and they were able to continue successfully.
Wait, he prayed to his dead dad?
He didn't pray. He didn't...
He pleaded to his dead dad. That's weird.
I don't think so. I think...
You don't
think
that's odd?
No.
Okay. Maybe it's just me.
Like, my grandma, she sits and talks to her husband every day, even though he's been dead for, like, 2 years. It's just that sort of thing. You're not, like, making a prayer. You're just saying, ugh. Come on, Dad. Can you believe this? God, help me out.
Oh, it's like Simba talking to his dad in the clouds.
If we want to minimalize all of that.
Cool. All right. Yes. I'm following.
It's a Mufasa moment, which is really funny because of what happens next. Now, the relief came, and they were able to continue successfully with the filtering of the audio performance. Now, this is not enough to spur anyone, even the most susceptible and suggestible person around, which would be myself, onto a lifelong quest to study the nature of reality. This was simply some equipment that was having an issue, a whispered plea, and a respite from the problem. Coincidental, I'm sure. And neither of them thought much about it until a few days later when they were playing back through the re-recording and listening to their final product. Right after the break, during which there was all of this technical difficulties, they heard a voice in the recording. And the voice said, "Zucchini, it is I. It is clear. Do you not know it is I? I am always with you and help you."
So wait, he's zucchini.
He's as in the vegetable. As in the vegetable. This was a secret childhood nickname known only between Gemelli and his parents, both of whom had passed away, but that was especially his father's name for him.
That's what he probably really wanted to name him. Mom was like, no.
Let's name the kid Zucchini. It's a strong name. I had an uncle, Zucchini. I'm so sorry.
He was a botanist.
All of our people. Now, the two men hearing this, they became more than a little concerned because not only was this outside the realm of their science, it was also outside the realm of their religion. The official Catholic view, which is shared by the majority of modern-day Christianity, is that EVPs, or electronic voice phenomena, all these manifestations of audible communications from the dead, they're manifestations of evil, the devil trying to trick and beguile the faithful. Now, the two of them, when they experienced this, they were conflicted with a similar conflict that happens to so many individuals who experience things like this, but find themselves ascribed to organized belief systems. If this experience is truly evil, then why did it seem positive? If it was the devil, why was it the voice of his father saying, "I'm here to help
because
you,
he's
I'm
tricky.
Always with you"? I guess that's a total possibility.
I've seen Supernatural.
Oh my God. You've seen the last 9 seasons of Supernatural be the same thing over and over.
Exactly.
I hate Supernatural.
That's,
I can't do it anymore.
That's how I know.
I can't do it anymore, Jace.
I don't blame you.
I used to love Supernatural.
I don't think they could do it anymore either.
I miss the old Dean.
Which one?
Straight from the soul, Dean. I'm trying to make a I miss the old Kanye joke.
Yeah, yeah. I miss the old Dean that used to wear the sweet leather jacket all
Does
the time.
Does he not wear
Dean.
A leather jacket anymore?
Not like since the last like
Do they even have that stupid
seasons?
Car?
Oh yeah, they do.
Okay, good.
I
That's
think.
Good.
I didn't see the last season. It might not anymore. I don't know. It might be a Transformer now. Who knows?
It could be.
Michael Bay might be directing it. Hopefully not.
Anyway,
it might actually get better.
Now, the two men decided to take this question of what had happened and how to interpret it to the highest authority that they could, which was the Pope himself. Pope Pius XII listened to the recording, and after he did, he sat quietly for a time thinking or praying until he finally stated, quote, "Dear Father Gemelli, you really need not worry about this. The existence of this voice is strictly a scientific fact and has nothing to do with spiritism. The recorder is totally objective. It receives and records only sound waves from wherever they come. This experiment may perhaps become the cornerstone for a building of scientific studies which will strengthen people's faith in a hereafter." Unquote.
That seems rather helpful.
What
I was
going to
say, like, I was not coincidental, but weirdly supportive, convenient. There we go. That seems like a convenient answer for them to progress in what we're about to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. It by no means was it doctrine. And I actually, while I was doing some research, I came across a lot of people who had similar questions about the phenomena of EVP and also I found this story. So I found the story with our original subject, but then I found this story divorced from our subject. I found it in a lot of different places. No. Wow.
What happened?
I found it in a lot of different places, none of which mentioned our main subject for the evening, which actually makes me believe it's a more credible account. A lot of times, cool. These sorts of things, if they only appear in conjunction with a specific story, they kind of seem to be details that were made up for this specific story. Right. Now, while this experience, like I was just saying, is still used to this day as evidence of the afterlife and appears in numerous places without even a mention of the other works of Father Ernetti, it was perhaps Ernetti and not Gemelli who was the most affected by this. Not only the experience itself, but also the response of the Pope. This, to Ernetti, was all the proof he needed to undergo that previously mentioned transformational, lifelong quest to study the nature of reality, and gave him a hypothesis to get started. And the hypothesis was that the things which have passed away, both the people and their circumstances, still exist somewhere. But how best to communicate with them?
They're in elsewhere.
What's that?
So it's...
Is it from magic?
No, it's from Elder Scrolls.
But how best to communicate with them? That's the question. So the physicist set out to discover the truth. And while doing so, he bumped up against a few of the most illustrious names in modern science. Now, in the terms of the story, that is Ernetti's origin story. It's his superhero moment. And it takes place at the right place in the right time. He's in a lab, he's in a laboratory, and something supernatural happens. It's awesome. I love it. But once that origin story has been firmly established, we lose him for a number of years, at least within the context of this story. And it is important to remember that Ernetti was in fact a real person. And so while he did not go mysteriously missing or anything like that, we do end up losing a coherent timeline in regards to his quest to understand time and space.
Who needs a timeline?
Well,
time is irrelevant.
Whoa. I've heard time is relative. Ah. I've never heard time is irrelevant.
That too. It's a construct. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what we do know, what happens next, is in 1964, when Father Ernetti meets a fellow priest, a Father Francois Brunet, while traveling via ferry across the Grand Canal in Venice.
And then they become secret vampire slayers and find the lost city of Atlantis.
Whoa.
That'd be dope.
You might be onto something.
I was like trying to think of like weird, bizarro, mechanical stuff.
That's like the next YA fiction. We're going to be rich. Copyright. Trademark. trademark. Now the two men who had met for the first time there on the ferry.
Trademark all my thoughts.
Can you do that? How would that
intellectual
even work?
Property, Sam.
Your IP is that you think that sandwiches are nice and good. Would that be IP? What happens then if somebody in a movie is like, hey, make me a sandwich? Can you sue them?
Okay, let's continue.
Or did you mean all your creative thoughts?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Because I took you to mean
literally
every
thought
you have is trademarked.
Sam, you're an ogre, trademark. No,
thank you. Brunet had heard of Father Ernetti before. Ernetti hadn't really heard of Brunet, but when he met him there on the ferry, they instantly had a lot to talk about. You know, they spoke about God, about theological queries, and especially about different interpretations of scripture.
Wow, that is usually not my first conversation I have with someone.
Well, you're not a priest, and the other person's not a priest, too.
That's totally fair.
So this is just how when we sit down and we talk about iCloud keychain and things like that, they talk about the nature of the divine. So we should probably get different jobs. That's what I'm saying.
That's totally fair.
But while they're speaking, like I said, specifically about the interpretation of scripture, Ernetti said something that puzzled Bruné, that really confused him, and he said, it's almost silly for them to debate over these things, as there exists a machine that can definitively answer every question we have. And Bruné had...
Oh my God, they made Google.
They made the Googles. No, I guarantee if you type theological questions into Google, you still don't get any definite answers out of it.
Where's that AI that Microsoft made?
Oh no. The one that became a
racist. Troll. Yeah.
In like 3 hours. That's a bad indicator for our society. Now, Bruné, as you might imagine, had no idea what Ernetti meant. He could not even envision what such a machine could do or what it could be to answer all of these unanswerable questions, unless Ernetti had created some kind of a telephone direct to God each and every time. Now, Bruné was promised an answer, but not until the following day. And as good things come to those who wait, Bruné did in fact wait until the next morning. This is the first thing of the story that seems a little weird. This man has access to a super secret, impossible machine, and he's just inviting people to come see it after he meets them for one time on a boat ride.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, man. Maybe the trick.
Maybe it's a trap.
Murder.
The next morning, Bruné met up with Ernetti in his monastic living quarters at the San Giorgio Maggiore Monastery in Venice. And he begins by asking again, as he had the day before, what could you possibly mean, Father Ernetti? What is this machine? And Ernetti began with an exposition, the same one that we did, this story of he and Gemelli's unintended spectral recording, referred to these days as an EVP, which we've kind of already talked about. He told Bruné that this EVP set him on a path of research and discovery, and he claimed that this encounter forced him to ponder all the sights that humans see and all the sounds that humans have ever made. He wanted to know if these things, stored in the memory and dispersed into the air, simply faded from existence after the individual no longer exists in this world. And if that was the case, then how could these words, zucchini, I am always with you.
I get it. You like produce. produce. You like produce.
Produce. What does that even mean?
Zucchini. Bad. I'm always with you.
Zucchini.
What is this, VeggieTales? What are we doing here?
This would be the best
VeggieTales.
TM. Trademark.
I don't know. Where are
so
we
there must be some semblance of the past which continues to exist in the world of the present. And with this in mind, he approached some of the most well-known and brilliant scientists of the day. According to Bruné, the two names out of the 11 that were rattled off by Ernetti that stood out were firstly Enrico Fermi, who is the creator of the first nuclear reactor and a man often referred to as the architect of the nuclear age and the architect of the atomic bomb. And in the context of our little radio program here, he will be well known to our listeners for positing the Fermi paradox. The Fermi paradox, which states...
Is that like when avocados are really, really firm and then they just become weirdly ripe practically in the same day and they're really soft again? Is that the Fermi paradox?
No.
Oh, okay.
Any other guesses?
No. I'm assuming it has to do with vegetables or fruits.
What the Fermi paradox states is that given the size and age of the universe, and our solar system specifically, the odds are overwhelming that we are not alone. TM. And that even with as large as the Milky Way is, there has been ample time for extraterrestrials to make their way here. So, as he put it informally one time, where is everybody?
Oh, that dude. Yes. Okay, I'm following now.
That is the Fermi paradox in a nutshell.
And which is totally fair because, like, what, Earth is 4 billion years old and the galaxy's 10 billion years old?
And it's 100 million light years or 100 billion light years across.
I have no idea. But what I'm getting
How
at
many
is that
light
like,
years across is the Milky Way?
It took humanity like a couple million years to actually become what we are now, technologically and stuff. I guess true humans have only been around, I think, for like 200,000 years.
It can't be 100 million or 100 billion because the universe is only 14 billion light years across. So it's 100,000 light years across is the Milky Way. So yeah,
that's
even
still far.
It's a distance that we cannot comprehend. But Fermi's point is that, yeah, given the fact that there's that 6 billion years difference, even if you give someone 4 billion years to evolve, that still gives them 2 billion years to
get
here.
To us, which yeah. is a long time.
It should be sufficient. And I'd recommend, if you're interested, that you check out the Wikipedia article, because it goes through and it lists like 20 different answers to the Fermi paradox, either for or against. And the coolest one that I think I'm going to...
Is one of them The Great Filter?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to name a band this, The Great Filter, which is essentially that the great universal filter is that all societies destroy themselves
before they can become yeah, spacefaring. So,
yes. This is pretty good. It's pretty hardcore. Yeah, it's just like The Great Dying, which you told me about months ago now.
Yeah, the permanent extinction.
Yeah.
Where like 95% of all life just... Boom, gone.
Oh, man.
Yeah, the Great Filter is a fun one. I really hope we're actually on the other side of the Great Filter, like we've passed it already, but probably not. And knowing how much humans are great.
I'd recommend you look outside your window, and we'll go from there.
What, all the smoke?
All I just the haze? Mean the, metaphorically, like the world in general, you know, so. Now, the other individual connected to the program was Wernher von Braun. The father of modern rocketry, who was paperclipped from Germany to the United States after the Second World War. Now,
is that the jet engine guy? Or am I thinking of someone different?
Yeah, I think he like came up and designed and engineered the V2 rocket.
Nice.
Yeah. So he's very important, very big. These two, Ernetti and 9 other individuals, came together as a team to start working on this question of
and
where...
they were the League of Extraordinary Men. What?
Not gentlemen, just men.
Oh,
the
darn
League
it.
Of
I was
Extraordinary
so close.
Physicists.
Extraordinary priests.
Sure. I mean, von Braun and Fermi weren't priests.
Priests of science.
Ah, yes. They started to try to solve this question. Where does the past go? And the end result, perfected sometime around 1960, was what Ernetti told Brunet was called the Chronovisor. Yes, thank you.
Sorry,
it was
the best I got.
A time machine, and a unique one at that.
Really?
Yes. Now, the Chronovisor, it does not open portals for individuals to walk through, back or forward in time. However, it does allow an individual to observe any moment in history from any vantage point. And according to Ernetti, it looked like a large television screen utilizing a series of knobs and levers made out of different precious minerals and rare materials in order to be operated.
Of course.
Yeah.
Straight up alchemy over here.
Yeah. Now the team took the Chronovisor all over time and back, witnessing and recording some of the most important events in human history. Now, again, you need to remember that the idea here is that the Vatican was the one funding this research. They were bankrolling the whole thing.
It sounds like the main object of, like, an Assassin's Creed movie or video game.
It truly does, doesn't it?
It's the Apple of Eden, isn't it?
Sure.
Essentially, it's just a visor of Eden.
Pretty much.
Let's see back in time. You know, you think we would learn things then. Otherwise, we're doomed to repeat history, right?
We did learn things.
Clearly, we haven't.
We did.
Okay.
We'll talk more about the things we learned later. But right now, the Vatican's the one funding this research, right? So one of the very first places and times they go to observe is during the Passion of the Christ. from the garden to the cross. And supposedly they had recorded the entire thing. Now
on what?
On Chronovisor film, dude.
Oh, my bad.
That was the point.
I didn't know.
You could make recordings of things. You didn't just have to sit there and watch it. You could make recordings. And so the idea is that the Vatican has recordings of all of these things.
Okay, continue.
Okay. Now, another popular destination for the team was ancient Rome, where they observed history in the making and also the great works of high art, which we'll get into here in a moment.
Wait, so are we talking classical Roman artwork, where like they just copy Greek artwork, or are we talking like Renaissance?
The Roman Empire was well gone by the time the Renaissance occurred.
I know, but Rome as a location was not. It's still a city.
No, but
So we're talking about classical Rome.
Yeah.
And classical Roman art and architecture.
That's why, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So knock off Greek architecture. Got it.
I don't know if I'd say that.
Yeah, I would.
Now, they also observed and recorded some of the speeches of Mussolini. They observed...
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know, right? That one you didn't even need a time machine. They already did that, so I don't know why they did it again.
It was better the second time around, I'm sure of it.
In retrospect. They also observed Napoleon.
It was ironic, that's why.
Yes. Ernetti himself claimed to have watched Cicero delivering his first Cantilenaria to the Roman Senate and described him as a powerful and fantastic orator. Ernetti would later tell other
sources.
It's
really interesting how they're going back and seeing these very well-documented historical events.
Well, just you wait.
Oh, okay. Just you wait. Okay.
It's not a good story if you don't have proof, right? Now, Ernetti would later tell other sources that, quote, "The entire elaboration is based on a principle of physics accepted by all, according to which the sound and visual waves once emitted are not destroyed, but are transformed and remain eternal and omnipresent, so they can be reconstructed like any energy as they themselves are energy." Which,
oh man,
you know what that reminds me of?
That hurts me so much.
The rearrangement of dead molecules on planet Jupiter.
Ugh.
It's the same sort of concept that he's thinking, is that you have something which exists in one form, and then through science, even though it's been dispersed and made into other forms, he re-exists it again into that original form.
But and therefore, energy we all doesn't live forever. Hold data.
Sure.
Energy is used to communicate data.
This is why I'm saying Ernetti probably didn't have a quantum physics degree.
And, you know, entropy and heat.
Everything's entropy, man. Like, if you think about it, we're all just falling apart, man.
We are.
You just look at the world, man. You see entropy on the world stage, man.
You gotta
Chris Cogswell's like least favorite thing
is entropy.
Is the people who like at parties are like, entropy, man. I'm so deep. That was specifically for him.
Ah.
Brunet was understandably floored by this. On one hand, the story was, and I hope you'll forgive me for saying this, completely insane and maybe even impossible. But on the other hand.
Sorry.
This story came from
recomposed. We're good.
A very respected and respectable person, a priest whom Brunet had heard much about for quite some time, albeit only meeting him in person the day before. He explained this conflict within him and sheepishly asked if it might be possible for him to witness and observe the Chronovisor himself in all of its glory. And of course, as we should all be able to guess now, with a deep sigh of regret, Ernetti explained that this would be quite impossible. The machine had been destroyed.
No!
Right?
If only we remembered how to make it.
This is just a good rule of thumb, people. It's not the greatest rule of thumb, but if we're talking about something like a specific object, if someone's not going to show you the object, it probably doesn't exist. Like, you can have all of the good excuses you want, but like, there's no reason why the object wouldn't exist, right? If they made it, why would they unmake it? And I have answers for that. I'm going to get into it right now. But that's just one of my least favorite tropes, is like, I made this miracle thing. No, I can't show you.
But I'm going to tell you about it.
Yeah, what's the problem? If you can tell me all about it, why can't you show me it, right? So I'm just saying, try to be, you know, try to have a little bit of, not skepticism. Well, yeah, skepticism. Skepticism is fine.
What?
If used in a proper way, not cynicism, but skepticism.
Because, yeah, let's be honest. If they had this, if you mass produce it, you'd be making so much money.
Well, that's true, too. But there is a reason, right? Okay, so here's the reason. Brunet, who we should mention, he wrote a whole book on this subject back in the year 2002.
Oh, so he's trying to make money off the BS he just created. Okay.
He didn't create the BS.
Oh, okay, gotcha. So secondhand BS.
There we go. Brunet was heartbroken. He was horrified. How could such an important machine be dismantled? And how could they justify robbing the world of such a technological marvel? Enernetti explained, and it's a fine explanation, I suppose. But
what's the explanation?
The explanation is that the chronovisor wasn't only restricted to the viewing of the past. It could also view any place during the present or any time during the future. Ernetti and his cohorts, at least one of whom had been forced to work for the Nazis, recognized that even the most righteous and respectable man, given the power to see and know everything at any point in time, would be quick to become a despot.
Interesting.
Therefore, yes.
It's also very interesting that he never told stories about the future or what's happening on the other side of the world.
We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Therefore, the device had to be destroyed because it would lead to, quote, the most fearsome dictatorship that the world has ever seen, unquote. Now, this, of course, is not what Brunet had hoped to hear, but the men stayed in close contact over the rest of their lives. And as Ernetti and he spoke more and more about the chronovisor, Brunet took him more and more seriously, finally becoming one of the most ardent and vocal of Ernetti's supporters. I just feel like, even, let's say, that the chronovisor was destroyed. They supposedly made recordings of all of these things, of the Passion of Christ, of the of Cicero, of everyone. Like, all of these actual recordings mm-hmm. that could be used to verify. And yet, Brunet has never showed these things. And of course, the excuse is, well, the Vatican has them, and they're not going to let them get out, and, you know, this and that. It's just like, the more excuses there are, the least likely something is to be true. You know, and that's not always the case. There are good excuses out there. There are real things that have to be hidden, maybe. I don't know. But the majority of the time, if someone has more than three excuses for you, it means that they're lying. That's the rule of thumb, okay? Everybody keep that in mind.
Yeah, right? I just don't want to hang out. Hey, Sam.
Whoa, dude. That hurts me.
Kidding,
deeply.
Kidding.
Are you? Okay.
Kidding?
We don't have to talk about it. Now, as time went on, however, Ernetti was finally able to offer Brunet and others some proof. It's not a video of the crucifixion. It's not, you know, Cicero himself, but there is...
But one of Mussolini.
One of Mussolini's. But the timeline on these things are nearly impossible to nail down, okay? So, like I said, we mentioned Brunet wrote a book about the chronovisor. It came out in 2002, and it's called The Vatican's New Mystery. But his first reference that he makes to Ernetti is in his published works back in the book The Dead Speak to Us, which is a book that was exploring the kinds of EVPs that sent Ernetti on his fateful lifelong quest, which was published back in 1988. However, the earliest reports of the chronovisor come not from Brunet and his accounts, but rather from an interview with Father Ernetti himself. It seems as though the story originally broke back around 1972, when an Italian magazine by the name of La Domenica del Corriere published a photograph, okay? This Ooh. Photograph was a close-up of a man mm-hmm. with his eyes turned upwards towards the heavens, with a okay. look of suffering on his face, with long hair mm-hmm. and a long beard. Jason, I'm going to give you three guesses. Who is it?
You.
No, that's one. It's Jesus. This extremely white individual.
Oh, wait a second. It's definitely not Jesus then.
Right. But he says, or they say it's Jesus, right?
Sure.
He's a very, very white man on the cross. And this is where it gets confusing, right? Because I do not speak Italian. and neither do all of the other weirdos who are spending their time on the internet researching time machines like myself. And so while this interview and the text of it is freely available, I could not find a translation because it's like a basically a screen grab of a page of the interview. It's not like it's not typed out. So you can't beat it through Google Translate. Like you'd have to sit down and actually
And nobody got time for that.
I don't got that kind of time. So there is no doubt, however, that this interview came out, that it came out with a photo that was supposedly Jesus on the cross, and the text of the interview had to do with Father Ernetti speaking to the magazine about the Chronovisor, okay? And this photo, it should have been a dead ringer for the Chronovisor team.
Did it have a Getty Image watermark on it?
No, it did not. It did not have a Getty Image watermark. Now, it should have been a dead ringer. If you can actually give us a picture of Jesus Christ, that's a pretty good idea that your time machine is working, right? However, shockingly enough, more than a handful of people said that looks really, really familiar. And did a little more digging, they realized that it was not a picture of a human being itself, but rather a close-up of a wooden sculpture, which resided in the Sanctuary of Merciful Love in Calavenza. Oh my goodness, why? Colle Valenza. The Sanctuary of Merciful Love in Colle Valenza.
I love how every time you're trying to say something Italian, your shoulders have to go with
and
it.
And I'm like moving my hand.
That's the only time.
Now, and this sanctuary is a monastery in the Umbrian region of Italy. The statue itself was sculpted in 1931 and had resided in the sanctuary for at least 7 years at that point. Interestingly enough, Brune, after the death of Ernetti, which was in the late 90s, early 2000s, I think, after the death of Ernetti, he offered two conflicting reports as to why this statue and this picture of Jesus looked so similar, identical even. The first explanation, which I personally enjoy quite a bit, is that of course...
The wood grain in his cheek.
The first explanation is that of course they look similar. They are a picture of the same thing.
I mean, you ain't wrong.
The sculpture was made by a sculptor by the names of Lorenzo Culao Valera.
When did that guy live?
I don't know, sometime in the 1930s, because that's when he sculpted this thing.
Perfect.
There you go.
That's all I needed, really.
He doesn't even have a Wikipedia page, so there's that.
Probably not Jesus, then.
Probably not. Now, this sculptor, he worked specifically off the direction of a nun who had claimed to have a vision of Christ on the cross given unto her. Therefore, as he carved what she had seen, he carved it so, so, so good that it looked like the real thing, because they were both observing the same thing. The nun saw it through a vision, and Ernetti saw it through the Chronovisor.
Are you sure it just wasn't like a bad artist rendition of like a suspect? You know, those bad...
I'm pretty sure.
Really bad, are you sure?
Because this was a wooden sculptor. You don't usually have those sorts of renditions of a lineup. You don't usually chisel the face of a criminal suspect in wood. Right? Am I wrong?
Yeah, but I mean, like, how far off from the actual person they can be?
Oh, that's fair. Yeah, that makes more sense.
That's what I meant by that.
However, the second explanation is a lot more mundane, and it is that the photo is a fake.
What?
Yes. So here's where I was saying, it's impossible to tell for sure.
Did you just waste an hour of my life?
No. I'm talking just about the photo itself. Okay. Yes. Now, Ernetti never claimed, according to Brune, never claimed that the photo was authentic. According to Brune, according to Ernetti...
Oh, he just let other people assume that it's authentic and never said otherwise.
Possibly. The Chronovisor, according to Ernetti and people who worked on the Chronovisor with Ernetti, the Chronovisor couldn't take close-ups because that'd be stupid. It could only take broad landscape photos, general images, not specific.
Yeah, things that don't normally change over time as easily as people.
Therefore, the photo, which is a close-up of a man, it was produced only to discredit Father Ernetti. Now, again, interestingly enough, there may be at least some sort of external verification of this one. Like I said, it's impossible to, or it was impossible for me to read the interview. I don't know whether or not Ernetti actually ever said that this was the actual image of Christ himself, or if after people realized it was a sculpture, then he started saying that it was a fake. But in any case, one interview... who later interviewed Brune, he worked with the French publication Masala, which translates roughly to Beyond, and it's a sort of paranormal, sci-fi, whatever sort of a magazine. And this interviewer
sounds right up our alley,
right? He confirmed that Ernetti had claimed that the photograph was a hoax and that it was not authentic. He never said it was authentic, that sort of a thing. So, at the very least, you have two people. Brune, after the whole explanation about why they look similar didn't work, Brune claimed that it wasn't real and that Ernetti said it wasn't real, and so did this interviewer whose name I could not find. Okay, so...
Well, I wouldn't want to put my name on that either.
So, you have this photograph. Maybe Ernetti provided it, got found out, changed his story. Maybe it was there just from the beginning to discredit him. We can't prove either way. But... We do know that there is one thing that Ernetti specifically provided as proof from his own hands that was supposed to prove the chronovisor as a functional device.
For some reason, I feel like I'm not going to be a believer of this. I'm not going to be persuaded.
I would just like to encourage you to believe a little, okay?
Sam? All right. What proof did he give us? What are we dealing with?
It is the transcription of a lost play. A manuscript. Ooh. Yes, a manuscript of Quintus Ennius's Thyestes, which is a tragedy which is focused on the story of the titular character Thyestes, the king of Olympia, who deceived the gods, and his recompense ended up being served his own sons at a state dinner. And some pretty good Greek stuff.
Yikes. Yeah, yeah. That's hardcore.
Yeah. The story has been told by a few different people, all of whom I am blanking out right now.
That is literally some Games of Thrones stuff.
It really is.
Is that probably where they pulled this from?
Probably.
Inspiration?
I would think so.
Have you seen the latest season?
No.
Oh, so you have no idea what I'm talking about.
But if it's that sort of a thing.
Oh, yeah.
I'd say probably. This is a very famous story. It's a classic in Greek mythology, so he's not the only one to write a story about it.
Makes sense.
So Euripides, he wrote a play. It was also lost, but it was about this same character. And then there was one other as well.
Why can't people just hold on to plays?
I know, right? So this is what Ernetti produces. He says that he used the chronovisor to peer back in time to ancient Rome, and that the author, Quintus Ennius, often regarded as the father of Roman poetry, was putting on a production of his new play, which was also his last.
It must be a really large amphitheater then if the chronograph or chronovisor can only do landscape shots.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I would think so.
So it also does sound?
It could only photograph landscapes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Weird.
Theoretically, it could see closer up, but it could only photograph the landscape.
Does everything just get fuzzy?
Yeah, probably. Probably. Ernetti produced the manuscript.
That's how cameras work.
He produced the manuscript in the original Latin nonetheless. But, as I'm sure you'll be shocked to find, this piece of evidence was also shot down quite quickly.
No.
Yes. A scholar of the classics, one Catherine Owen Eldred, found a few problems with the manuscript. And what I really enjoy is that these problems aren't about the content, because we can't know about the content because it's a lost play.
Right.
It's all pure linguistics that she used to kind of disprove it. The first is that parts of the play that were not directly copied from the existing fragments, because there were some existing fragments of the play, parts of these passages used words that did not exist when the play was written.
Should
have
used
performed,
Google Translate.
Right? Back in the 1970s.
That's all I'm saying. If he was able to peer into the future as well.
Right. Now, the existing fragments, though, that did exist, they had originally only been estimated to be about 10% of the total play, but in Arnetti's transcription, they accounted for 65% of the whole.
Those numbers are different,
they're
Sam.
They're quite different, thus kind of indicating that the
a really
script
short play
would have been too short, yeah. Exactly. And finally, due to the nature of Latin as a dead language, the vocabulary and lexicon that was used, while impressive for a modern-day scholar of Latin, which is what Arnetti was, it would have been impressive for him, but if we're talking about the man who is one of the greatest Latin writers of all time and the father of Roman poetry, if those were the words he used, then they would have actually been poor and, mm-hmm. and limited vocabulary and not on his caliber, you see. Now, Brune to this day persists in his protest, claiming that Eldred worked hastily and did not correctly read or translate the manuscript, which is pretty crappy to say. She has a whole lot of training and verifiable publication history in the Latin language and classical literature department, whereas he has none. And so it's one of those things of like, well, you might be the expert, but I know this is true, and therefore it doesn't matter. However, what we have here, some argue, is not necessarily the damning evidence that there is no such thing that there is a chronovisor. What we have here...
well, you say that, but what do we have here?
What we have here, thank you, are hoaxes, either deliberate or otherwise, that were created by a desperate man who did in fact have a chronovisor and wished to warn the world of the drastic dangers at hand. It's very akin to people like...
Well, he hasn't prophesized anything. What dangers?
Well, the danger of the chronovisor itself. The danger that it exists or existed once. It's very akin to individuals who are proven to hoax UFO reports, not because or UFO photos and evidence, not because they didn't see a UFO, but because they did see a UFO and they wanted people to believe it so bad that they created this hoax of evidence. Ed Walters is one of the best examples of this, theoretically. So that's the
idea.
Don't
say people do that.
People hoax UFO evidence, Jason.
That is...
I can't believe you didn't know about this.
Bizarre.
I know. It's very strange. I can't imagine why they would. See, Arnetti knew that the chronovisor existed, and he knew the dangers it possessed. And ironically enough, this man whose entire thesis statement was, once something exists, it always exists, albeit in different forms which can be reconstituted later in order to render the original form again. That's what he believed. He realized finally that the same was true of the chronovisor itself. He created these hoaxes in order to demonstrate the dangers of the machine, which according to Brune, while destroyed, still exists in the form of blueprints that Arnetti left behind with notaries in both Switzerland and Japan. Switzerland and Japan shortly after the destruction of the machine. But all of this, if taken to be true...
So it sounds like we have a treasure hunt on our hands.
We do. We do. And I'm the lost here city to of say Atlantis. It. If you can provide me the blueprints of a working chronovisor, we will name you the treasure hunt champion of the world. And along with that, that means you don't have to pay $5 a month to get our extended editions. You just get them for free.
Look at
if
that.
If you give us the
you
blueprints.
You find one treasure, you get another.
Exactly. If you can furnish us with the blueprints of a working time machine, okay? So everyone keep
I'm
that in mind,
go
please.
See the dinosaurs.
He's going to be a new kind of paleontologist. Now, all of this, if taken to be true, disregards a few other spots of trouble for the case of the existence of the chronovisor. The first is that the entire concept of this, a screen that can see into the past, a machine being used by evil powers to create an omnipresent dictatorship, and therefore the need for the machine to be unmade, they first pop up in a story by the sci-fi great Isaac Asimov, by the name of The Dead Past, which was published in 1956. which was years before Ernetti even told anyone about the Chronovisor, but a few years after his important transformational experience with the EVP and the Gregorian
chant. Now, hold on.
Sure.
Why didn't you start with that? We could have summed this up in 15 minutes and called it good, Sam.
You know, that's just not what people want out of this show, I guess. They want us to talk about things. Jason's not on board.
We should go back into the past and reorder it.
I mean, I could just delete the audio file and I could edit it and I'll just fix the whole thing in post. That's what I'm saying.
There we go. Perfect. Sounds good.
We'll fix the episode in post. Another is the supposed deathbed confession by Ernetti himself, appended to the end of a book on the Chronovisor, which was submitted anonymously, wherein the priest confesses to making up the whole thing, not out of malicious intent, not because he wanted to be rich and famous from it or anything. He made up the idea of the Chronovisor in order to help it become a reality one day in the future. He made up this invention so that somebody would have the inspiration to make it a reality.
I guess that's fair. I mean, wasn't it H.G. Wells that created the idea of the time machine?
Yes.
And we've been kind of obsessed with it for quite a long time.
And we've been working on it.
Right.
And I'm almost there.
Sam, no more Rhino Rush.
I'm this close. This Rhino Rush is the time machine. I feel myself drifting
just
through time and space.
Just don't spill it into electronics of a hot tub, okay?
Here we go. Yeah, it's fair. It's also very much like the Toynbee Convector. Again, from the Toynbee Tiles, that story, I think it was by Arthur C. Clarke. No, I could be wrong. I can't remember who wrote it now.
Oh, well.
Bradbury. It was Ray Bradbury. The Toynbee Convector, wherein the man goes into the future, he sees what they have in the future, and then comes back, and then because he saw what was in the future, they make it in the past, and then it becomes the future. Self-fulfilling prophecy and all of that. But Jason.
Yeah?
As you might have noticed, I think you turned off your iPad a while ago.
Oh no, it's still here.
Is it still here?
Yeah.
As you'll notice.
I lost track of where we were.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair. I don't blame you.
Until you said beyond. I'm like, oh, wait, I saw beyond. There it is. Because you put it in all caps, and I appreciate that.
Yes. The notes end here, right?
Yeah, thankfully.
The story of the Chronovisor ends
lives
here.
Lives on. No.
Right?
Yes. Oh,
or
God.
Does it?
No. Sam, did you purposely...
What if I told you, Jason, that there are more than a few individuals out there who believe that the Chronovisor still exists, that it's not only used to see the past, but to see the future as well, and that there is at least one
and it's held by the Illuminati.
Semi-well-known presidential candidate who would stake his career on the fact that the Chronovisor still exists and is being used by the United States government to train time travelers to this day. And what if I told you that this entire episode was simply the prequel for Conspiracies That Jason Just Doesn't Understand, Part 2, Project Pegasus, which is what we're going to be covering next week?
That was masterfully done,
Thank
Sam.
You. Thank you. I was really excited in that.
I am both upset, excited, and scared.
Thank you. Yes, next week we'll be coming back with at least one time travel conspiracy, Project Pegasus, which was championed by a presidential candidate in the last election cycle. But we may do some other ones as
was
well.
It Jeb?
So it was not Jeb Bush.
Just tell me if it was Jeb.
Please clap. Please clap. Poor Jeb Bush. But that is a story for another time. For now, we're going to leave the Chronovisor where we found it, in the past, as we move forward to the glorious future that has been foreseen. But again, that's all for next week. I need time to do the notes. Yeah, there we go.
Good.
Jason.
Sam.
What do you think about the Chronovisor? Say it in a way that I don't have to edit out.
A bull feces.
Oh, all right. There we go. That's a good one.
A bull fecal matter.
Surprisingly enough, Jace, I agree with you on this
what?
One. I know, right? Bizarre. But it's such a great story. It's one of the hallmarks of modern.
I'm actually not surprised by that, Sam, because I'm going to read you the text message you sent me about what we are covering this week.
That's fair.
Which was, let's see. I figured we'd do something. I figured we'd do some shows on stuff we both think is bull. So, so time travel. Perfect. There it is.
There you go. Right, there we go.
There you go.
Yeah, so that's what happened.
Here we
and
go.
We're sticking to it. Anyway, so we will be back with more time travel stories next week. It's going to be pretty good. But in the meantime, we do have some people that we would like to thank. Let me get their names here.
I don't get why you constantly have to do that when you're searching for something, when you'll just delete it.
You know, I do it when I'm with customers too. Like, if I'm like working on something on their phone, I'm like, all right, we're good to go. And they're like, okay, thank you. Anyway, all right, so we've got a few new patrons this week. So we would like to thank, man, I really have to remember when we stopped. I keep doing this thing where I cannot remember who we have thanked and who we have not thanked. So we're just going to say these ones again just to be sure. We'd like to thank Elise Bischoff.
Woo, Elise!
We did do that one last week because I remember we were talking about how woo Elise.
Yeah, AK. Yeah, yeah.
Which means we've also done Caroline Holton. Thank you again, Caroline. We already did Woo Caroline last week, but that's okay. We'd like to thank Betty. Thank you, Betty.
Oh, damn, that's a real Jason. Person. Okay. I wasn't sure if that was like... Okay, I'm ready.
We'd like to thank Betty.
Yeah, Betty.
We'd like to thank Asura.
Woo, Asura.
And we'd like to thank Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
That was great. Guys, thank you so much for being a patron. It really keeps the lights on, really helps us to continue to grow our library of spooky books, to afford the programs that we use to make the show, and just to keep the quality of it up. So we really appreciate it. Everybody who donates to the Patreon. The other people that we would like to thank are some of the people who wrote us iTunes reviews this last week. We would like to thank April D, Carly Wall, J Diggle 717, and Jessica Ox. Jessica Zox.
Okay.
Okay. And we are going to go ahead and we're just going to read Jessica's. She just says, hilarious and knowledgeable. These two guys are great. I love the topics they pick to discuss along with their humor. I really recommend listening if you love anything bizarre. And this week we are up to 353 ratings in the iTunes store. We did it.
Yes.
We made it above 350 and we're so grateful for that. Our power grows and grows with each passing day.
So now we need 500.
500 reviews, our listener friends.
I believe in you.
Children of the night. I don't know. I was going for a Dracula thing. It didn't work. You do it now. You be Dracula.
Would you like... what?
Do a Dracula thing.
No, I've
what
got...
the heck?
I'm not going to do a Dracula thing.
Listen to them, my children of the night. And then there's like a wolf. No, you're not going to do one? Fine.
No.
Jason's a spoil sport.
Yep. Always and forever.
Other than that, I don't really have anything else. So, Jace, you got anything?
No, Sam.
Okay.
I updated the Patreons on how Rocco's tank is going. So
there we go.
That's all
there
I've got in my life.
Yes, yes.
That's all I got going for me.
Okay. You can find me on Twitter. Thanks, Jace. You're good.
Okay.
Children of the night and all that. You can find me on Twitter at BeerLordElfbane.
And you can find me at Mighty Moit.
You can find the show at Not Alone Pod. You can find us on Facebook, Not Alone Podcast. You can join our Facebook group. Remember, we are not alone, a community for the strange. We would like to thank everyone for submitting their memes to the Not Alone Meme Stash.
Keep
it's
it
very
up.
Important. It gives us sustenance in life and the ability to get out of bed in the morning. So thank you. And you can also find us on Instagram.
I guess.
Somewhere.
We're there. You
the
can't
last
find
time
us.
I posted there, so but that's okay. Yeah, and you can email us at notalonepodcast@gmail.com with any questions, concerns, happy thoughts, sad thoughts, anything. You can talk to us about anything. Sure. With that, I did it last week.
Remember, whether you're creating a device that can see into the future and the past, or whether you are taking a photo of a wooden Jesus, you are not alone.